Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem. Welcome back to today's Daf Yomi. Meseches Chulin Daf Chof Hei. We begin right on top of the Amud. Omalei Rav Ado Bar Ahavo. He asked a question. Lerava. This connects to yesterday, where we learned that regarding the ability of a kli, a utensil, to either receive tumah from the outside or transmit tumah from itself onto something else, this system sort of splits into two categories. It depends what type of kli. We have kli cheres, earthenware kalim, pottery, which works one way, whereas the regular utensils, like wood and metal, work differently. And primarily we spoke about two distinctions between these categories. Whereas a kli cheres utilizes its airspace as a conduit, as a conductor of tumah both ways. Meaning, if you have a kli cheres which is tame in itself, and now you place some other material, a piece of food, into the airspace, suspended into the airspace, the interior airspace of the kli cheres, it will receive the tumah from the kli cheres even without coming into direct contact with the raw material of the kli cheres. Likewise, the kli cheres can receive, can contract tumah via its airspace. For instance, if there's a dead lizard suspended within the kli cheres' interior airspace, that tumah will now travel over into the kli cheres, which will absorb that tumah. So the airspace works as a two-way conduit. And that's unique to kli cheres. That doesn't apply to other kalim. By other kalim, in order for there to be a transferring of tumah either way, from or to the kli cheres, needs to be direct contact. No airspace systems. Number two, regarding the outside, migabe, the back, the outside. Whereas by a regular kli, the back is a perfect conduit for transmitting tumah. Kli is tummy, you touch the back, you become tummy, and vice versa. By kli cheres, it's not so. It's only from the inside, whether you touch the walls inside or the airspace, as we explained. Okay, so these are pretty much direct opposites. Kli cheres works with aver, but not megaboy. Other kalim work the opposite. Gaboy, but not aver. So today we'll explore further, you know, the sources of these halachis. Amalei Rav Ado Bar Ava L'Rav. So we have established yesterday that, yeah, by kli cheres, aver is a conduit. Aver, airspace, is a transmitter. But the Mishnah explains that that's only aver. But gaboy, the back, that doesn't work by kli cheres. V'yei kli cheres mitame migaboy. Why can't the kli cheres also receive tumah from its outside? Mikal v'chaim, based on kal v'chaim. Uma kol ha-kelim she'en mitamen me'aviron. Look, other types of kelim are not open to absorbing tumah me'aviron by way of their airspace, as we established yesterday. Still, so despite that deficiency, still mitamen migabon, they're susceptible to tumah from their outside. Certainly a kli cheres she'mitamen me'aviron, a kli cheres which will absorb tumah via its airspace, it has that advantage. Eina din, wouldn't you agree? She tami begaboy, that tumah should apply from the back as well. Amarava, amakra? The pasuk says no. A kli cheres is limited to the inside. V'chol kli pasuach. Asher ain't summit pasul olav. The pasuk is describing a kli which is open, which has no summit pasul. Summit is a cover which is Puzzle is a cover and tzavon, which means that it's glued, it's sealed on it, it's closed up. It doesn't have that seal. Ain't tzavon puzzle alav. So in this case, the tumah enters the kli. Now, what type of kli? What type of material are we talking about? Ezo kli shatum asoy. Which kli is considered one shatum asoy koydemes lepischei, where the tumah sort of rushes into the opening? Regarding which kli does the Torah relate to its opening as the sort of access place for tumah. Havi Omer, let's assume, let's understand, that klicheres. It's referring to klicheres. Why? Because by the klicheres, the pasuk does relate to it as toichai. Right? We had this yesterday, right? The tumah went toichai into the opening. So this type of descriptive term, this type of reference, evidently is a klicheres. Havi Omer is a klicheres. We conclude that it's a klicheres, and the pasuk is telling us. Only if it's not sealed, if it's not closed, then Tumah can access it. V'chi ein tzamid pasul olav, doesn't have the seal on it. Who the Tumah, then it receives Tumah. Why? Because the Tumah can access it from the inside, it can go in. Ha'yesh tzamid pasul olav, but if it has the seal, so the inside is locked out, tar. It's immune to Tumah. Why? What do you mean? Why can't I just be metame the kli by way of the outside? The answer is it's not going to receive tumah from the outside. So that concludes this point. Okay, so now that we know that a kli cheres is metame from aver, but not from the outside. Now let's switch to the other kelim. The other kelim can become tumah from the outside, but not from aver. Why? V'yu kala kelim metame and me'avir. Perhaps I could suggest that the Avir conduit can apply to other kelim as well. Mikal v'chaim, based on kal v'chaim. Uma kli cheres, she'im metame b'gabay. Since a kli cheres, which does not accept tumah from the outside, as we just established, still, metame m'yavir, it can accept through its Avir, kal ha'kelim she'im metame b'gabay, other kelim that could be metame from the outside, so it has that advantage, that one up, over kli cheres, ain't it did, wouldn't I assume she'im metame m'yavir, that they are metame from the Avir as well. Amakra comes to pasuk and rules it out. Aver is unique, is exclusive to klicheres. Toichai. So the tumah fell into the toichai, the aver of the klicheres. Toichai, this toich. Toich shalze, only the interior, the earth space of this, of the klicheres, has the ability to conduct tumah, v'loy toich shel achar, as opposed to toich of a different kli. So aver does not apply by other kelim. Ask the Gemara, v'hani toich yadar shinu. But we already utilized the toichai words earlier, yesterday. We used it for gzera shava, right? Just briefly, we had a pasuk that spoke about the tumah falling into the airspace. We had a pasuk speaking about the food item being present inside the klicheres, which was tameh. So one pasuk describes the tumah transmitting to the klicheres, and one, how the klicheres, which is somehow tameh, is going to transmit tumah to the food content within it. And the Gemara made a connection. Just like the klicheres has the ability to transmit to its content, even indirectly, even through the airspace, as we proved yesterday from the mustard seeds, right? Likewise, the klicheres will absorb, will receive tumah from a dead lizard suspended in its airspace. So we need that connection, toichai, toichai, to connect the two processes, to learn that it's a two-way deal. So how could we go ahead and use that same word again today to exclude other kelim from this airspace concept? Says the Gemara, actually, arba toich eksibi, we have four derivations from toich. Because it says toich twice. Now, first of all, it says toich twice, which is extra. And also, it could have just said toich without toich. So toich could have been toich. Toich could have been toich. So we have four derivations to learn. Chalugufei, one for its own sake, for the basic halacha, that the kli can transmit tumah to its content even by way of airspace. Chalug zereshava, one is for the zereshava to connect transmission to absorption, right? And they both work through airspace. V'chad, the third one is toichai shalzeh. Only the klicheres' airspace works in this manner, as opposed to the interior of another type of kli, another material. You need direct contact, there's no airspace system. And finally, b'chad, the next one is toichai v'loy toichai. That although the klicheres will transmit tumah to food which is in its content, in its interior, in its airspace, that's if it's directly situated in the outer kli's airspace. But suppose it's teich teichoi, which means you have another kli inserted into the kli cheres. Rashi explains the second kli, the interior kli's opening, protrudes above the opening. It goes higher. It rises above the kli cheres, which surrounds it. The interior space of that interior kli constitutes a new interior entity, separate from the outer kli, creates its own environment, its own habitat, and protects its content from being affected by the kli cheres' status. Even if the interior kli happens to be not kli cheres, see, by kli cheres it's more simple because it's immune from receiving tuma on the outside, so it sort of resists the surrounding environment. But even a kli shetef, a kli that you rinse, Rashi says is a term referring to kelim made of other materials. You see, a kli cheres, when it comes tummy, you gotta break it, you can't do it in the mikveh. Whereas a kli shetef, another kli like metal and wood, once it becomes tummy, you immerse it in the mikveh. So that's the term kli shetef, it's rinsed. It's just a term referring to other kelim made of other materials. So even that type of kli can resist the effect of the kli cheres if it's embedded within the kli cheres. And that's learned from teichai, food within the kli cheres itself, as opposed to sitting within another kli that's sitting in the kli cheres. Okay, so bottom line is, we have our exclusion. We learn from this pasuk that the idea of aver only applies to kli cheres and not to other kli. Finally, says the Gemara, okay, so a kli cheres works with aver, and it's also resistant from the outside. Other kelim do not have the aver system, and any sort of contact, whether you touch them from inside, from outside, the tumma transfers. Why? Ask the Gemara, below you, kol ha-kelim mitamen migamer. Perhaps other kelim are also resistant from the outside. Elam etoichna b'negiyah. The only way to transfer tumma is by touching the inside, the actual inside material of the kli. Only inside, not on the outside. Why would I say that? Since a kli cheres, which is open to the aver system, but still is resistant from the outside, other types of utensils, which are not going to be mekabel tumah through aver, wouldn't you agree that can't become tumah from the outside either? Amakra, here comes the pasuk and says yes. This protection that the kli cheres has, that it's free from becoming tummy on the outside, that's unique to kli cheres. Amakra, we call kli kli pasuach, asher ein tzamid pasul olav tummyhu. So the kli cheres, which is the subject of this pasuk, as discussed earlier, which is not sealed, its opening is not sealed, which allows tumma to get through, tummyhu. That's how it becomes tummy, because on the outside it won't become tummy. And the inference is that this limitation is unique to kli cheres. Only a kli cheres is resistant from the outside. Hi, this one, who is the chi ein tzamid pasul olav tummy, that if it has no seal, the opening is open, the tumor can get in, that's how it becomes tummy. Ha yesh tzamid pasul olav, but if there's a seal on it, which preempts access to the interior, so only leaving only the outside exposed, tar, it's tar. But that's unique to kli cheres. Ha, kalakim, but other kelim, wood, metal, bone, ven sheyesh tzamid pasul olav, whether they're covered with a seal, limiting access to the outside, ven sheyein tzamid pasul olav, whether they're not sealed, which gives access to the inside as well, metami, they become tummy, whether through the inside or through the outside. Okay, so as a quick review, we have this contrast between kli cheres and other kelim. By kli cheres, it will transmit or absorb tumah through the avir, even without direct contact, but not from the outside. Other kelim work the opposite. Any direct contact, whether from the inside or the outside, makes them tummy, and transmit tumah from them to the food that comes into contact with them. But it has to be by way of direct contact as opposed to avir. Okay, now we move on to another Mishnah, which will present a distinction between other types of utensils. In this case, we're contrasting metal utensils, kli matchos, made of all types of metals, gold, silver, copper, versus kleiets, utensils made of wood, which work with different guidelines. So we have this sort of opposite again, tohar b'kleiets, something which is considered tohar, immune from tumah by kleiets, such as a kli which has no interior, has no receiving abilities, just a flat piece of, that's tohar. A kleiets, to become tummy, has to have a toich, has to have an interior. Rashi says we learn it from sack, because it's the same, listed in the same pasuk as sack, and sack is, has content, has the ability to contain. But otherwise it's tar. But this flat keli, tummy b'chle matres, if it's made of metal, metal doesn't have to have that receiving ability. Even a flat kli matres is tummy. On the other hand, tar b'chle matres, something which, if it was a kli matres, would be considered tar, such as an unfinished utensil, which wasn't yet, you know, sanded down, smoothed out properly, designed properly, so it's still unfinished regarding kli matres and immune from tumah, tummy b'kleiets. If this same type of idea would be by a kleiets, it would be tummy. Kleiets, as long as it can do its job, it's okay, even if it's not perfectly, you know, complete. Tanu Rabban, we have a braisa, which will specify for us exactly what the Mishnah had in mind. Goylmei. Goylmei is like a goylem, right? An unfinished product. He also, the goylem was a person, but not 100%. He couldn't speak, right? Right? The Mishnah Perek Yoveh speaks about a goylem, a person whose character traits aren't fully developed. Goylem means an unfinished product. So it depends. Goylmei kli'eitz, if it's made of wood, it's made. It's still okay. It still can be used, and it's still tummy. So it's a kli. It has the receiving abilities of a kli, but it's not fully sanded, it's not fully designed. Tamei, pshutein toir. On the other hand, if it's pshutein, if they're just flat, without a receiving area, they're toir. In contrast to the kli matres, which work just the opposite. Gomei kli matres, the unfinished kli matres, are toir, they're not functional. Pshutein tamein, on the other hand, if they're flat, even without a proper interior, they're still considered a kli for tumah and they're tamein. Nimtza, so it turns out, so we have this contrasting formula. Tor b'kliyetz, tome b'klimatris. Something which by kliyetz is tor, is tome by klimatris. And vice versa. Tor b'klimatris, unfinished by klimatris, which is tor, is considered tome b'kliyetz. Ve'eluin gom b'kliyetz. So we speak about the gom b'kliyetz. What exactly is that? It was carved. It was formed. It wasn't yet fully, you know, designed. The designs weren't yet engraved. It wasn't fully sanded. He's going to still sand it down, the shabbats, engrave these little squares, designs, legarer, to scrape it down, lecharkev, to engrave some sort of big designs, latiach betunas, to sand it down with tunas, some sort of fish, maybe tuna fish, the skin of this tuna, which is like a fine sanding, muchosar kain, it's missing the base, oy oygen a lip, oy oyzen a lip, or a handle, like an ear, tummy, it's still tummy because it's still functional. But mechusa chatita, if it's lacking the carving out, it's just a block of wood, it's tar. Of course, it's not a kli yet. Obviously, mechusa chatita, if it's lacking that carve, it's not yet a kli. Pshita, of course, obviously it's tar. Why even discuss? The tricha must be like this. It was partially carved. The chak, he carved kfiza, a small carving, a small containment area, which is three lug, bekava, in a block which was intended for a kav. A kav is four lug, kfiza is three lug. So he carved out three quarters of the intended, you know, size. So it's not yet finished. But it can already contain. The answer is no, it's not the way it's meant to be. It's meant to be a kav, it's not. We don't consider it a finished utensil. Ve'elu en gol mikli matris. How do you describe the unfinished kli matris? Similar to the kli eitz, kol she'asad loshev, intends on still sanding it down, l'shabeitz, engrave some little squares, l'garet, to scrape it down, l'charker, to other types of engravings and designs, l'akash b'kurnis, to flatten it out with a hammer, smooth it out with a hammer, m'chusuken, it's missing a base, oy oygen, a lip, oy oizen, a handle, tor, m'chusukis, it's tummy. But if it's merely lacking the cover, it's tummy. Because it's pretty much finished, it's, you know, that doesn't take away. So we have this contrast between the unfinished kliyets, which are makabel tuma, but by the matreis not. What's the difference? Finished is finished, unfinished is unfinished. Maishna hani or maishna hani, what's the difference if it's made of this material or that? If it's unfinished, it's unfinished. Rabbi Yechon Amar, he says like this. Hoyle will chavad asuyin. In contrast to the kliyets, which are meant for everyday, you know, personal use, the metallic ones were more meant for more elegant settings. And you're not going to use it unless it's, fully designed. So until that happens, it's not considered a finished utensil for its own purpose, for its own, you know, respective function. Rav Nachman Amar, a different twist. Since they're more of the expensive variety of utensils, so he's not going to sell it until it's fully, designed. Might be not any difference between the two reasons. It could be now, the difference will be a material that exhibits one element and not the other, clay etzem, something made of bone. So expensive it is, but it's not considered, you know, on the elegant track. So according to Rav Nachman, that's about value, so if it's unfinished, it's not going to work yet. According to Rav Yechanan, it's about elegance, which doesn't apply here. V'ozu Rav Nachman Tamei, and in fact Rav Nachman follows his own, you know, opinion, the Amar Rav Nachman, as Rav Nachman tells us, Klei Etzim, Klei Matchis, the Klei Etzim, unlike Klei Matchis, regarding this halach, because we look at value. Michlal, so you mean to say the klei etzem makabel tuma, that klei etzem are makabel tuma? I mean, that's the premise we're working with. Bone is makabel tuma. Where do we find bone in the pasuk? Torah speaks about metal, wood. And yep, here it is. Asanya, Rabbi Shmuel b'noi. Shor, Rabbi Yechanan, ben Breiko Eimer. Matam milim, what does the pasuk mean? V'chol masei izen. Utensils made of goat material. Tizchato needs to be cleansed, which means to say it's open for tuma. What's it coming to cover? Lahavi davar abomine izim. It's covering something which was manufactured from goat material, for instance, menakarnayim, from the bony, you know, horn material, menatlafayim, or the hooves. Here we go. So we see that boneware is makabel tuma. Shar behema b'chayim minayim. So we speak about goats. What about other bones of other animals? Tamalayim b'chol masa, to cover all bones as well. So it's encompassing all animals, so why does the pasuk specify goats? Prat loif, as opposed to, you know, some sort of bone material that we find in birds and fowl, as she says, like the utensils made of nails, bird nails. So that's not included, that's not substantial enough to be considered a kli. Okay, so again we have this, you know, the two opposites, right? We have this contrasting formula. We have the kliates versus the klimatris. And the kliates are mekabel tuma only if they're a kli, they're mekabel. At the same time, they're mekabel tuma even if they're not 100% finished, because you would use them regardless, you would sell them regardless. Whereas klimatris don't have this sort of mekabel condition, which means to say even if it's not something which with an interior, with a toich, it's makabel tuma, provided that it's a finished product. Continues the next mission with another sort of contrasting formula, but this time it's about maaser, the chiv of maaser, the obligation to separate truma and maaser from edible produce. So this mishnah refers to two variations of shkedim, of nuts, of almonds. We have the marim, those which when they grow old and they develop, they're bitter, inedible. They're only eaten when they're young and undeveloped. In contrast to the mesukim, the sweet ones, the edible ones, which when they fully grow, they're edible, but they're not edible when they're young and bitter. So when are these chayv and maser? The answer is when they're edible. According to our mishnah, chayv b'shkedim amarim. So the state of development which would trigger the chayv by the bitter ones, which means to say when they're undeveloped, when they're still edible, potah b'mesukim. So that stage, if it were mesukim, they would be potah. The mesukim are the ones who turn edible when they develop, when they mature, when they grow big. So when they're small, they're still unedible. On the other hand, the chayv b'mesukim, the stage where if they were mesukim, fully grown, they're chayv, potah b'marim. By the marim, fully grown, they're potter, because now they're inedible. They lost their edibility. Tanur Rabbanon. And the Brisa elaborates. Shkeidim Amarim, the ones that grow bitter when they grow old. Ketanim Chayavim. Gedolim Turim, the only Chayav when they're small and edible, not when they're big. The exact opposite is the Mesukim, the sweet ones. Gedolim Chayavim, they're edible when they're big, so the Chayav then, but Ketanim Turim, they're Pata when they're small and inedible. That's one opinion. Which is reflected in Amish. Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shmuel, the son of Rabbi Yossi, quotes his father, Oymer Shem Aviv, Zel Vezel Aptur. Actually, both mini types are Pater. Even the ones that are edible. They're not developed, they're not Chayev. Notwithstanding their edibility. Va'amrila, there's yet a third Chita, some say Zel Vezel Achiv. In both cases, they're Chayev. Rashi explains, the fully grown, the fully developed nuts, whether these or those are chayiv. Why? We'll see in a minute. Amar Rabbi Lo, so Rabbi Lo teaches us that Hayra Rabbi Chanina b'Tzipora, Chanina ruled in the town of Tzipora, Kedivra Oimer, like the Shita, which says Zev Zel Liftar, that the small ones, whether these or those, are pata, because they're undeveloped. One last question remains. Amar Zev Zel Achiv, how do you explain the other Shita, which obligates both types when they're fully grown? When they're big and bitter, why? What are they good for? How could you be mechayiv and truma? Amar b'yechanan, you can fix them up. You can sweeten them, make them edible, like they are, or by toasting them in the fire. And therefore, it's considered oichel, it's considered food, and it's chayiv and mas. Next Mishnah. Hatemet. Temet was this sort of watery grape juice. So they took grape, after they squeezed the grapes, they took the grape skins or whatever, pits, and then they poured water on it and had it sit there. Initially, it's just water. And then when it sits and mixes in and ferments, it becomes a beverage. Now, the halacha is, if one has money for Maser Sheni, right, he had the Maser Sheni material, which was transferred onto money, now that money has to be taken to Yerushalayim to use for purchasing of food material. That can't be used to purchase water. Water or salt. Those two things are off. What about temet, which is technically water? Can that be purchased using Maser Sheni money? It depends. HaTemet, says the Mishnah, actually, before it ferments, while it's still fresh and watery, ain't a nikah because of Maser. It's like water. You cannot use Maser Sheni money to buy it in Yerushalayim. However, once it ferments, it turns into a beverage, it's like wine, and then you could buy. The second halacha regarding temet is upoisel sam mikvah. At this early stage, before it ferments, it will disqualify a mikvah if it gets mixed in. Halacha is, if you have a mikvah which is not yet fully topped off to 40 sa'ah, it's only 39 sa'ah, and in falls in a barrel, a bucket of 3 lug of water, it disqualifies the mikvah. Provided that it's water. Wine wouldn't have that effect. Temid, what status does it have? Wine or water? It depends. At this early stage, it's water, so it couldn't disqualify the mikvah. However, Mishahichmitz, so in contrast to the previous Mishnayos, where we sort of contrasted two different things, this type of kli versus the other kli. Here, we're going to focus on one product, one item, and discern the differences between the, you know, different stages within that item. So before it turns into chaymet, before it ferments, has one status. It's water regarding maser sheni, regarding mikvah, mishechmet. Once it ferments, its status changes. It gets transformed and it's categorized as wine. Nikah b'kasev maser, you can buy it with maser money. Ve'ena b'zalza mikvah, and since it had a status of wine, if it drops into the mikvah, it doesn't disqualify it. Next halacha, ha'ach na'shutfa. So we have brothers who inherited their father's herd. There's animals. And they partnered. They joined together as a partnership. What status do they have? Now, regarding Master Behema, which is the obligation to separate the tenth animal, every tenth animal, use it as a carbon, bring it as a carbon. So the halach is that if it's owned by a single owner, it's Chayiv and Master Behema. But if it's a joint partnership, if it's a shutfus, that herd is not chayiv and maser behema. It's a halacha, we learn it from a pasuk, gil lecha. Rashi said lecha has to be privately owned by one person as opposed to a partnership. So what happens if the two brothers inherited their father's herd and they partnered? So it depends. If they divided the herd and then they joined together as a partnership, is like any other partnership, and they're pata from Masa Behema. But if they haven't yet divided the property, it's still sort of their father's estate. It's called Tfusas Habayis, so it's technically not a partnership. So in that case, they're Chayiv and Masa Behema. Another halacha that pertains to this distinction, Kolbon. And Kolbon is that service fee that they pay annually when you give the Machzis HaShekel. You have to add that Kolbon, that service fee. That's only if you're bringing for yourself, but let's say you're bringing on behalf of somebody else. So then they give you that discount, there's no service fee. So back to our story of the brothers who inherited their father's estate. If they divided and then came back together as a partnership, so each to his own, each one's giving his own chiv, fulfilling his own, dispensing his own chiv of Machzis HaShekel, and of course you have to add the service fee. But if it's still undivided material, it's still the father's estate, so it's considered like the father, and they take money from there and contribute it to the Machzis HaShekel fund. It's like their father is doing it on their behalf. Interesting. It still relates to the father, even if there is passing. It's like it's the father's estate, in which case they get that discount. Like any father who pays on behalf of his children, there's no kolbon. Okay, so let's see the Mishnah. Achna shutun, brothers which are partners. Kishachiyam b'kolbon, if the estate is as yet undivided, sorry, if it had been divided, and then they join together as a partnership. So now when they pay the Machzis HaShekel, they have to add the service fee, Peturim Masa Behema. But now since they're considered partners, there's no Masa Behema. On the other hand, if the estate has not yet been divvied, so they're just sort of carrying on the father's, you know, system. It's not technically a new ownership. Which obligates them in a Masa Behema like anybody else. So Peturim not Kolbon, since it's the father doing it on their behalf, there's no Kolbon by the Machzis HaShekel. Let's go back to the Temet for a moment. So this watery mix on the verge of fermenting, if it's pre-fermenting, it's water. Post-fermentation is considered like wine. Mani Mastisin, who's speaking in our Mishnah? It's not Rabbi Udra Rabbanu, the Sanya. We have a Brisa, I'm a Tamid. One makes this Tamid mixture. So he pours in, you know, a certain set amount of water, a gallon of water. A matzah, and he drains it out afterwards, and he finds exactly a gallon, no change, no addition. Potter, according to Rabbanu, he's potter from Master, despite there being some sort of, you know, flavor or whatever. We just assume it's pretty much the same water that came in, absorbed a little flavor, but it's not significant enough to turn into wine. For Rabbi Yehuda Machayev, he says, despite the fact that it hasn't really added much here, apparently there isn't much wine material here, but nevertheless, since it absorbed the flavor and the taste and the it got, you know, tinged, it has the status of wine. Now, it doesn't seem like he's hinging it upon fermentation, even without fermenting. So Mani, who's speaking in our Mishnah? Mishnah which sets down fermentation as a criterion. Who's speaking? I Rabbon. Is it going to Rabbon? Afal gav de hichmitz. Even if it ferments, it's still water. I Rabbi, according to Rabbi, afal gav de hichmitz, even without fermentation. Amar Rav Nachman Ravua, we turn to the next Amud, b'she hichmitz. Machlekes. Umasizim, Rabbi Yehuda. He says, you're right. This machlekes, meaning this that Rabbi Yehuda regards it as wine, that's provided that it fermented. Of course, if it's not fermented, he agrees it's water. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, there is that precondition. Masnisin, now Mishnah, which likewise sets forth, establishes that as a precondition. Rabbi Yehuda is Rabbi Yehuda speaking. V'cheinam Rabbi Yehuda, likewise he learns, v'sheich mitz machlekes, machlekes is only once it ferments, which is exactly as per our Mishnah. Okay, all the best to you, and atzlocha rab.